This is a special edition of Desiring God Behind the Blog. David Mathis here with John Piper. John is freshly back from a month of travels in the month of May. We're recording this on Wednesday, May 30th. He's just returned from being in Louisville at the Gospel Coalition meetings with the other council members. And then he was in Europe for the earlier part of the month, left on April 30th, a month ago today, and was gone until, right, I believe, April 18th. So, John, you first went to Romania. Can you give us any highlights from that time in Romania, in Bucharest?
Yeah, Bucharest, not Budapest. Don't make the mistake that Michael Jackson did when he stood up in front of thousands of people and said, I love Budapest, and everybody groaned. No, you're in the wrong place. So I try not to make that mistake. It was wonderful. Each of these stops was wonderful. To meet the friends who love God's sovereignty. You know, I make these travels because I exist to spread a passion for the supremacy of God in all things. So to have 750 younger and older people from Baptist, Brethren, and Pentecostal, that's the alliance of the evangelicals there, that they can get together and talk about God is the gospel, made me fall in love with that glorious truth all over again. And to see among them a significant percentage of younger pastors who you would put in this category of young, restless, reform types, I suppose, who love the gospel, love mission, love church planting, and love God's supremacy in the way he saves sinners. And so they were eager to hear more about that. The highlight probably was the last night there in, I think it's called the Palace Hall, where Ceausescu, the dictator, had given his speeches of self-deification and stood before 4,500 communists to say we're great in our communism, and then have him fall precipitously in December of 1989, swept away by a crowd of people who pushed into the place where he was giving a speech. He got helicoptered out. The pilot, conspiring, landed in a place he didn't want to land. He's arrested. 5 days later, they shoot him in the head, and he's dead, and communism is over. And what was so moving is that the older people there could remember seeing that hall filled with communists clapping in their rhythmical way to say yes to this dictator, and to have me stand there in the very place where he stood and have the place filled 20 minutes early with 4,500 people, another 500 probably standing in the aisle, standing in the halls, just to hear a Christian pastor talk about don't waste your life. Mm-hmm. So I got shivers standing there thinking, this is just emblematic of what God does. He raises up kings, he puts down kings, he advances his gospel. We should be encouraged, I think, about what's happening in Eastern Europe and pray that God would breathe on it, that in that dominantly Orthodox land, the gospel of free grace with the exaltation of Jesus Christ in his finished work would spread mightily.
And then you headed from there to Geneva and also to Hamburg. Both of those were Gospel Coalition partnerships with Don Carson. Tell us about Geneva and Hamburg.
Right. In Geneva, it wasn't a formal Gospel Coalition event because there hasn't been yet formalized a French-speaking expression, but it was kind of on the way. It was a one-off experimental event with Don and me and some others to talk about preaching, and there isn't in French-speaking Switzerland or North Africa, or French-speaking Africa or France especially, I'm not sure about Africa, much expository preaching. So they were just jealous. And this Biblical Institute that we were part of there in Geneva was jealous to inspire men and illustrate for men what is expository preaching, why is it valuable, and to encourage them in it. And so Don and I tried to do that together. And there the group was even more, I would say, younger church leaders who were hungry for the Word of God. I came away from there, just like from Romania, very encouraged that doctrinally deep, expositionally rich, sober, mission-oriented, preaching and church life is what these young men are hungry for. And so that was real encouraging there. I was being translated all the way, back and forth, you know, not simultaneous, but I speak, they speak. So that was in Romanian. That was the same way in French there, although Don from Quebec
tried
to do it without any help at all. That was great to watch. And then we headed off to Hamburg, and that was the most formalized gospel coalition, because there Matthias Lohmann and Christian Weigert and others have, in fact, formalized a expression of the Gospel Coalition, you'd say. It's not a branch. We don't market Gospel Coalition. We just illustrate it, and people can do something like it if they want. And they have one called Evangelium 21, Gospel 21, there. And so there were about 1,000 guys, and that was the most, I would say, openly and clearly reformed in its orientation, and did the same messages there basically that we did in Geneva. And maybe the highlight there was just to be in the Ark Church, the Ark, A-R-K, like the Noah's Ark Church, a very large and substantial church, especially by German standards, but really any standards, which had formerly been a Pentecostal church, a large and influential one. And Wolfgang Weigert, the pastor who'd been there 40 years, was met by God through reading Ian Murray's The Forgotten Spurgeon. And then when he thought he was the only reformed person on the planet and knew no live human beings who believed what he saw in Spurgeon, and he was coming alive to this, ran into, of all people, Johnny Erickson Tada, who was there doing a concert. And he kept hearing her refer to the providence of God in her life. And he said, that sounds like what I've been reading in Spurgeon. And he asked her, what do you believe about that? And she, I guess, spent a couple hours with him unpacking not only the truths of the doctrines of grace, but also living people that show he's not alone. And he led that church through a fairly peaceful, they didn't lose a lot of people, so it's a large, thriving, vital, joyful, reformed-oriented, outreaching, mission-driven church that was a tremendous encouragement. So I think he just kind of symbolizes, and his son now is moving in as the main preacher, Christian, is an emblem to me of what God is doing all around the world in moving people to a doctrinally rich, deeper, more sound, balanced, mission-driven, Christ-exalting, Bible-saturated, God-centered ministry.
I think I saw a picture of you on the front steps of Calvin's church in Geneva. Saint-Pierre, is that?
Yeah, Saint Peter's.
how was that?
Oh, that was good. I just passed over that whole dimension. These guys were, I'm looking over at our video guys, you were there, and it was to walk in the steps where Calvin walked and to talk about preaching, where one of the great inspirers and models of expositional preaching was very moving to me. So I'll be eager to see how they turn those hours into 6 minutes of helpful video.
Right. So that, then you're back on May 18th, the Friday. Left that following Monday, this last Monday, May 21, and 21st to 24th, you're in Louisville with the Gospel Coalition Council meetings.
Yeah.
How did that time go?
I love to go to Louisville and experience their hospitality there at Southern Seminary and drink Diet Coke with Al Mohler. he has real sympathy for fellow addicts, he says. And I don't like the term, but he's kind about that. And what's so rich about it is it's small. There are about 40 council members. Each of us could bring someone. So I took Jason Meyer, who's the senior pastor-elect, sort of, at Bethlehem. And we had a great time rooming together and flying together. And to hear it all through his fresh ears was inspiring. But basically all it is a tiny little bit of business, make decisions, but a huge amount from morning till night of panels talking about issues. There must have been, I don't know, 10 of those maybe, half an hour or an hour, and followed by a Q&A from the 40. And they tackled some really tough issues. I mean, one of the toughest that we've been wrestling with is not just is homosexuality right or wrong, and how do you love people who are struggling and want to struggle and be chaste and walk in God's way, given what they've been given. But also now the legal thing, with so many states making an effort either to legalize so-called homosexual marriage or define marriage as a man and a woman. That's what we're facing here in Minnesota. And to struggle with both the way a church or Christians should be involved in that struggle politically. And I think the most sobering thing was to look at some of those gifted evangelists. I'm thinking of Tim Keller and Matt Chandler and Darren Patrick, and hear the groups talk about how increasingly hard it is to take a clear biblical stand on the immorality of homosexual behavior and have it not thrown back in your face at the very front end of evangelism. So, for example, Tim Keller said in Manhattan, the issue of that, of where you stand on homosexuality has risen up there with why is there suffering in the world and how can God condemn anyone to hell, especially if they haven't heard the gospel, the kind of objections you would get at the front end of trying to introduce somebody to the faith. He said, now the question is, so you're saying I have to be opposed to homosexual behavior in order to be a Christian? And you have to nuance that so carefully, don't you? Because to say you must be against something morally to become a Christian sounds like you compromised salvation by faith. And you probably would if you said it just bluntly that way. But the question is, you're saying if I make a commitment, if I get on the inside of this thing called Christianity, I'll have to take this position. And the answer to that is yes. And that has made for all of them, for all of us, evangelism increasingly difficult. So to live in a society where the issues have become front burner moral issues for the culture, which the Bible is clear on, is making our job harder. And yet I'm looking for God in his sovereignty, who loves people and wants to see them saved, somehow in a remarkable way over time turn that around. I think if we love the way we should love, if we stand firm the way we should stand firm, if we help the people who are attracted to the same sex fight well and walk with Christ in a wholesome way, just like a single person would need to be chaste who's heterosexual, that milieu and that modeling, I think, just might work for the gospel in the long run.
You emailed last night saying you had decided to tackle this issue on June 17th. Right. Were you inspired by the dialogue there?
I was inspired by the dialogue there and by yesterday's staff meeting. Because unbidden by me, several staff members said, I need help on this because I feel like I'm drowning in people and this issue in my neighborhood. And so I said, okay, which is better, sooner, near November, when Minnesotans have to decide if they want to define marriage a certain way, or later? And they all pretty much said, sooner the better. So that's what I'll try to do, Lord willing, June 17.
John, thank you for joining us on this special edition of Behind the Blog.
Thanks for doing it.